The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Okay, we have four argued cases this morning. The first is number 20-1489 Tetra Tech Inc. versus United States. Mr. Storti.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Tyler Storti on behalf of plaintiff appellant Tetra Tech Inc. This morning, Your Honor, I'd like to focus on the fact that what brought us to this point was a ruling granting a motion for judgment on the pleadings several years into the case. And we contend that the lower court erred in granting that motion, necessarily ignoring some of the well-pleaded allegations of the First Amendment complaint, and it appears drawing some adverse inferences against Tetra Tech as the non-moving party, which is inconsistent with governing rules and case law.
But the basic issue here, as I understand it, is whether standard 21-13-13 applies to the underground cable work, or whether it's 21-11-13, correct?
That's the ultimate issue, Your Honor, correct.
And your contention is that 21-13-13 is ambiguous, and that you had testimony from industry experts that it didn't apply. That's your theory, right?
That's a good part of it, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, but I don't see any analysis of the language of 21-13-13 that would tell us where the ambiguity in language is. You don't really analyze the language of the specification in your brief at all.
We do a little bit, Your Honor. I can find exactly where, but I think to answer the court's question, I think the ambiguity stems from the summary section of 21-13-13, which is found at appendix page 908. And what the summary describes is what the section, this particular section, applies to. And at 1.2A.
Okay, hold on a second. What page of the appendix?
908.
We're looking at two different appendix page numbers at the bottom of the JA.
That might be correct, Your Honor. There's an A605 that's above the actual appendix number, and I think what that is from is an appendix that was filed in the court below. And I believe in this court's appendix 908 at the very bottom of the page is the where I intend to be.
Okay.
Okay. If I may, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Where's the language?
I'm looking at section 1.2, which is summary, and then 1.2A, which reads this section includes the following fire suppression piping. And then there are subparts 1 and 2. And what our contention is that part 1 of 1.2A, which refers to wet pipe sprinkler systems with above ground piping in, and then it describes some particular buildings. On the face of that part 1, that's just talking about above ground, so that's within the buildings and the above ground.
What about part 2? It says underground fire suppression piping from water supply to the new export building.
So moving on to that, Your Honor, looking just at the text of that, where it reads underground fire suppression piping from the water supply to these buildings, what we think that that means is that when it refers to water supply, that means wherever the water came from to get to the foundation of the building, or what they call the riser, where the pipes go from outside the building underground up through the foundation. That little stretch there is called the riser. And so when this specification section is referring to the water supply that's connecting here to the underground fire suppression piping in the building, we think where they say underground fire suppression piping, that's only referring to the stretch from the riser and up through the foundation into the building where it connects to the above ground piping referred to in section one. That's what we think when it's underground there.
Where in your blue brief do you make that argument?
One second, Your Honor. This is appellant's second corrected opening brief, and it starts at page 31. It goes on to page 32 and on to page 33. And effectively, what we think, if you read what that section 1.2A of section 21.13.13, if you read that in context of the rest of the contract, and specifically including section 22.11.13, which is the facility water distribution piping, it's equivalent, and that would be appendix 922. But the summary there, describing the scope of what that section is dealing with, talks about water distribution piping and related components outside the building for water service and fire service mains. So we think in context, section 22 is dealing with everything outside the building that's underground and deals with getting the water from wherever it came from off-site, across the site, and to the buildings. And then the only way to have a clean handoff is for then, once you get to the building and the riser, section 21 kicks in. So we think the text of those two in the context of the overall set of documents.
Mr. Storti, just so I understand, your understanding of this portion of 21.13.13, 1.2A2, in your view, is any of that piping from the project underground, or is it above ground?
There is a stretch that's underground, Your Honor, and that's from basically.
There's also a stretch that's above ground, correct? When you're talking about risers.
Correct. It goes from underground to above ground.
And so why could any above ground piping be considered to be quote unquote underground fire suppression piping?
I don't think that would make sense, Your Honor. I agree with that. I think the above ground piping would be in part one of 1.2A.
So I guess that's my point. If you're pointing to certain piping that is technically above ground as being the piping that's referred to here, which says underground fire suppression piping, it doesn't seem like a very logical argument.
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that 1.2A, as I think the distinction would be that we're talking about things sort of within the boundaries of the building. So within the footprint of the building, there's portions of the system that are underground. That's the riser part that where it pokes up through the foundation. And there are parts of it that are above ground after you get past that and up into the building. And I think the distinction.
Okay. In your amended complaint, you repeatedly talk about, you describe the piping that you had to dig up and replace as underground fire lines. Right, that's something you're talking about, and you describe it as a underground fire suppression system. So I guess because you've described the disputed piping in your own words as the underground fire suppression system, why isn't that the same thing as what's being talked about here, underground fire suppression piping?
Well, the only part that was actually we were directed to dig up and replace was the underground portions that are outside of the periphery of the building, out in the field of the site. And if you look at section 22.11.13, which is the one that we designed and built that part of the system consistently with, it describes water distribution piping and related components outside the building for water service and fire service mains. So on its terms, section 22 applies to those quote unquote underground fire suppression piping.
And then finally, if water supply in your view is ambiguous, then wouldn't that be a patent ambiguity on the face of the document that you had an obligation to raise to the contractor or the fire engineer?
I would think that it's more latent, Your Honor, because as the testimony is from the witnesses, basically everybody except for the government's fire protection engineer, it never occurred to anyone that they would be applying section 21 to the underground lines in question. So when the witnesses, as they testify, see water supply, and this is right in our brief too, he says he understands that to mean the water supply when that is, gets to the building and wherever it came from before that. And only after the government's fire protection engineer came in, well after the system was in place and everyone else had understood that to not apply at all, he said, I guess if you look at it the way Mr. Lofton, the fire protection engineer, is now interpreting it, I suppose that's a little bit ambiguous. But I think the testimony was it wouldn't have occurred to a reasonable person before that, that it was so patent that anyone would have to mention it.
Where does this theory appear in your complaint?
The theory about there being an ambiguity, Your Honor?
Yeah, and your reading of 21.13.13.
Well, it's not expressly in as much particularity as we've described it in the brief, Your Honor, but I would say it can be inferred from the allegations that are there, including the fact paragraph 5.
What page?
This is the appendix, page 110 is where the First Amendment complaint starts. 110.
Okay.
And in paragraph 5, the allegation about what the actual contract required is that we had to meet these requirements of the NFPA governing codes, et cetera. And then it describes specification section. It says 12.11.13. That was a typo. It referring to 22.11.13 was what we used to design and install the underground fire lines in compliance with those contract requirements. So that's where we allege, here's what we did and here's what we thought we were required to do under the contract. But then elsewhere, and this was, I think, where the trial court got it wrong in concluding that we had basically admitted that we didn't comply with the contract. There's no allegation like that. And in fact, if you look at paragraph 21, which is on page 113 of the appendix, there's an express allegation that plaintiff performed work as required by the contract. So I think the combination between that paragraph 5 and that paragraph 21 show that here's what we thought applied. We didn't deem anything else to apply to the work in question, and we performed consistently with the requirements of the contract as we understood them. But it doesn't, we don't go as far as to get into the ambiguity on the face of the complaint.
Okay, did you argue the ambiguity point to the Court of Federal Claims?
We did, Your Honor. And there's our response brief in response to the motion for judgment on the pleadings appears in the appendix at page 1589.
I don't have any such page. I have three volumes of the appendix. The last page number is 1089.
There should be a volume four, Your Honor. It goes from 1090 to 1713.
Okay, thank you. What page?
Find it, Your Honor. I think it starts at about page 11, and there's further argument on page 21.
Page 11 of the appendix?
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Appendix page 1602.
Okay.
Is where, sort of in the factual background, we go through how we understood the two specifications to relate to one another and to the work. And then at page, appendix page 1612, there's an argument that effectively, in some says, you know, even if this section 21 was also something that was to be complied with in general, it didn't apply to the work in question, or at the very least,
Mr. Storti,
was ambiguous.
When I'm looking at A1613 of the JA, this is your response to the defendant's summary judgment motion. It says here, well, you know, this is where you're talking about why you believe at least this specification is ambiguous. And then you say it was your understanding and intent that the underground fire lines in question were covered by Section 22, and that the fire protection specification, Section 21, only applied to the riser, above ground sprinkler lines, and fire alarms. So, in your view, it's always only been the riser that is that counts as the underground fire suppression site, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
For purposes of 21 to 13, right? The rest of the underground piping, in your view, is covered by 22, 11, 13, right?
That's correct.
Okay, unless there are further questions from my colleagues, I think we're out of time. We'll give you 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear from Mr. McBurney.
Thank you, Your Honor. So may I please the court. This case, at least as it was argued at the trial court, is a very simple matter of contract interpretation, and specifically, the issue before the trial court was whether Tetra Tech was required to comply with all the provisions included in their own 100% building design submittal, which of course included section 21.13.13, which is titled above ground and underground fire suppression piping and sprinklers. And at the trial court, Tetra Tech argued that that provision was not a part of the contract that they were required to comply with, because it only appeared in 100% building design submittal, which they believed was not a part of the contract. That was the argument that Tetra Tech raised in their request for equitable adjustment to the contracting officer. That was the argument that Tetra Tech pressed at the trial court, and the trial court appropriately rejected that argument. It now appears that Tetra Tech has abandoned that argument, and Tetra Tech agrees with the trial court's conclusion that specification 21.13.13 was in fact included as part of the contract, and that Tetra Tech was required to comply with it. Tetra Tech's argument now, however, is that although 21.13.13 was part of the contract, it did not apply to the underground piping at issue in this case. And Tetra Tech's new position is also wrong as a matter of law for a couple of reasons that we've set forth in our brief. And before I talk about those, I do want to briefly address a question that Your Honor raised. The only time, as far as I'm aware, that Tetra Tech ever pressed this argument was as an even if argument in its brief on the motion for judgment on the pleadings, and that does appear at Appendix 1612 and 1613. And it was an alternative argument, and it wasn't even exactly this argument, but it was close. And I don't think this
court... Why wouldn't that be sufficient to preserve it?
Oh, I do believe it's preserved, Your Honor. I don't think that Tetra Tech has waived that argument. But I do believe it should be noted that Tetra Tech's argument throughout has been that 21-13-13 wasn't part of the contract at all. And that's important because that's consistent with the allegations in the complaint. And this is a motion for judgment on the pleadings. And so the first problem with this argument that Tetra Tech is now pressing as its sole argument on appeal is that that position is not consistent with the allegations that were made in the complaint. It's not consistent with the plain language of the complaint, and it's not consistent, frankly, with the language of the complaint when read in the context of the complaint's attachments, which were incorporated to the complaint, specifically the request for equitable adjustment, where Tetra Tech solely pressed the argument that 21-13-13 wasn't a part of the contract at all.
Well, the complaint is sort of bare bones. Why isn't it sufficient to encompass this argument?
Sure, Your Honor. I think there's two responses I would have to that. The first is the complaint is bare bones, but there is a requirement under Twombly for it to at least provide us with fair notice of what their position is. And from the government's view, there's nothing in the complaint that provides us with any fair notice that they're arguing that 21-13-13 was part of the contract, but simply didn't apply to these pipes. What the complaint talks about was their allegation that the only provision that's relevant is that Section 22 provision. And again, Your Honor, when viewing the complaint as a whole, including all of the attachments that were incorporated therein, in particular, the request for equitable adjustment, it's clear that that was Tetra Tech's argument. And so I don't think that the complaint meets the Twombly standard of providing the government with fair notice that they're making a claim that they acknowledge 21-13-13 was part of the contract, but in fact, they believe it simply was somehow limited only up to these risers. And so for that reason, we think that the rest of the arguments don't even need to be addressed because on a motion for judgment on the pleadings, the court was correct in interpreting the complaint and finding that it's simply inconsistent with this even if alternative argument that was raised below and it's now the only argument being pressed on appeal.
Well, let's assume for the moment that the complaint tells us that they believe that the piping in question here is covered and governed by Section 22.11.13. And so necessarily what that means is they are not also governed by 21.13.13. And so now the question is, why is it correct to say that as a matter of law, these pipes are not covered by 21.13.13?
Certainly, Your Honor. And I think with that, if the court were to look at the language of 21-13-13 and reach that step, the first point is we don't think there's anything ambiguous about the language of specification 21-13-13. Looking at Appendix 908, which is the first page of that specification, the title is Above Ground and Underground Fire Suppression Piping. If we look at Section 1.2A, which is the summary of that section, 1.2A2 refers to it covering underground fire suppression piping from water supply to the new export building and kennel building.
But your problem, it seems to me, is that, as I understand the contract, it incorporated both specifications, right?
Certainly. That's correct.
And both specifications talk about underground piping, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So doesn't that lead to some potential ambiguity as to which of the two is going to govern underground piping?
No, Your Honor, because the two specifications are not internally inconsistent. I think that the two specifications can both apply to certain piping. But more importantly, to the extent there was any sort of ambiguity in that, again, these specifications were both included in Tetra Tech's 100% building design system. And so to the extent that Tetra Tech's own submission had an ambiguity, it was clearly a patent ambiguity that should have been brought to the attention of the contracting officer before Tetra Tech simply proceeded with its own now professed apparent assumption that Section 21-13-13 simply didn't apply. In this case, though, we think the language of the specification is clear. It applies to fire suppression piping from water supply to the building. It certainly does not have anything in that specification to support this post hoc interpretation that there's this arbitrary cutoff at the riser level.
The other side is saying that there's some ambiguity about the phrase from water supply in 1.2A2 of 211313. Can you first explain what their conception of from water supply means and then respond to why, in your view, that can't possibly be right?
Sure, Your Honor. So I'm always a little hesitant to attempt to explain my opponent's position.
They want us to believe that there's a good reason to think that the piping at stake in this specification refers only to the riser.
Right. And that's how
that therefore gives us some idea of what they think from water supply can mean. Now, could you explain what that could be and then why that is not reasonable?
Right. Well, so my understanding of their argument is what Your Honor said, that it applies only up to these risers, which are these connecting pipes between the water line below and the internal pipes of the building. And we think that's wrong because, number one, the pipes that are below that riser are the underground pipes. And this specification refers to both above ground and underground fire suppression piping. And so we see nothing in the specification that would support this post hoc interpretation that there's this arbitrary cutoff at the riser and no coverage for the underground pipes under that riser, which is what
the problem that I see is we're not considering 21.13.13 in a vacuum. It's the contract also incorporates 22.11.13, and that has broad provisions about underground piping. Is there something in 22.11.13, the language of 22.11.13, that indicates that it doesn't apply to the kind of underground piping we're talking about here?
Well, Your Honor, 22.11.13, I believe that's the right number, but Section 22 is a broader specification, which is dealing with plumbing. 21.13.13.
It talks about underground piping, doesn't it?
It does, Your Honor, but 21.13.13 is specifically concerned with fire suppression piping, which is obviously a unique safety issue, which is why that specification and that type of piping has additional requirements and additional concerns. There's nothing problematic with applying both standards to this underground piping. It's just that the standards in 21.13.13 are going to be more rigorous. In other words, you can apply both standards to this piping, which we think is appropriate, but at the end of the day, the 22 standards are going to be subsumed by the stricter requirements of 21.13.13. So we don't actually view it as any kind of problem to say, okay, both standards apply. The reality, though, is 22 kind of becomes a nullity once you're applying 21.
Well, what is it about 22.11.13 that suggests that it doesn't apply to underground fire suppression piping?
There may be something. I'm not sure that there is. I think that the more important focus is the distinction between fire suppression piping and other plumbing. But again, Your Honor, you can apply both standards to this underground piping. But obviously, when you have two standards, one of which is stricter, that essentially subsumes the requirements of the more relaxed standard but adds additional requirements, whether you're only applying the stricter standard, which in this case is Section 21, or whether you're saying you're going to apply both, the effect is the same, right? Because the stricter standards subsume the more relaxed standards.
So what is the government's view of what the correct and only reasonable understanding is of from water supply in Section 21?
Our understanding is this includes all of the piping that Tetra Tech was responsible for installing, both above ground and underground, up until the point where it connects to the main water main, which was obviously not piping that Tetra Tech was installing or modifying in this instance.
And then all of that underground piping from the riser to the main water line, you're saying that both Section 2113.13 and Section 2211.13 would apply to that underground piping?
I think they can, Your Honor. Although, again, I think it's a distinction without a difference, because if 2113.13 applies, which we believe that it does, then whether you're also applying Section 22's looser but included standards is really a moot point, if that makes sense.
And then, as I understand it, it was Tetra Tech's responsibility to somehow check in with the fire protection engineer.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Before installation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But that didn't happen here, right?
That's correct. And part of the confusion is when dealing with fire suppression issues specifically, that's where the fire protection engineer sign off is required. And because Tetra Tech submitted this to the contracting manager on site under Section 22, which is not a fire suppression standard, it never went through the fire protection engineer as is required by the contract. One additional thing that I do just want to point out, because it was in my notes, again, our primary argument here is that the complaint read in its entirety, particularly in the context of the arguments that were made in the REA by Tetra Tech below, does not support the alternative argument that Tetra Tech presses here. I did hear my colleague attempt to make reference to paragraph 21 of the complaint. We don't think that supports this current argument either, but I also want to point out that paragraph 21 is part of count 4 of the complaint, which was dismissed in a previous order by the court, and that dismissal is not being appealed. So we think, frankly, the allegations made solely in count 3 and count 4 are nullities to this court's analysis, because those counts were dismissed and are not on appeal presently to the court today.
How much of the riser piping is underground? Do you know?
I don't have an answer to that, Your Honor.
Okay.
But a decent amount.
Okay. Anything further?
No, Your Honors. We ask for affirmative of the judgment. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Storti, you have 2 minutes.
Mr. Storti, do you know the answer to my question? When you're focused on the risers, how much of the riser is underground? A lot of it is above ground. How much of it is underground? Do you know?
I don't know the specific answer to that.
Like 5 feet or something like that?
There's some testimony in the record, and I don't have a direct site, but to that exact number, 5 feet is what Mr. Gouvet says is his general, when he's talking about the riser, there's 5 feet of it underground.
Okay. So then, so your side's position is when Section 21 is talking about underground fire suppression piping, it's talking about a portion of the riser that's underground, not the above ground portion. And the underground portion is about 5 feet.
I think that's correct.
That's the underground fire suppression piping in Tetra Tech's view.
Correct. To give meaning to where it says underground fire suppression piping, that's what we're talking about. And that's just following on that, Your Honor, the course of dealing between the parties at every point up through when there was an actual dispute and Mr. Lofton came on the scene was consistent with that understanding. The system was designed, installed, inspected by the government's construction manager while it was being installed, pressure tested twice, approved and paid for and put into use for 6 months before and covered up with dirt before Mr. Lofton, while looking at something else, raised for the first time the notion that it needed to have been installed in accordance with Section 21. Up until then, the conduct of the parties was such that everyone else thought Section 22 was the specification that applied. And I think it's important that it can't be both. The contractor needs to know which one it's building to, and everyone had 22 in front of them while this work was being done. The only other thing I would add, Your Honor, is as far as fair notice goes about the ambiguity argument and argument about the two specifications, that had been raised in all the depositions and in earlier briefing to the court for years before the motion for judgment on the pleadings was filed. So the government had every opportunity to understand what Tetra Tech's theory was. We think the judge.
I think we're out of time, Mr. Sturdy.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So the case is submitted.